All right, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Aleph and Aleph, Vayushnehem Kohanim. Tanur Banan, Hika Zeh, V'chazar Hika Zeh. So he has these two individuals who are safek as to which one is his father, because he was possibly a Ben Tisha, the Rishon, or Ben Shiva the Acharon. So one of them for certain is his father. We're just not sure which of those two is his father. So if he hits one of them, and then he goes ahead and hits a other one, meaning now he's hit both of them, or Kilel Zeb, a Chazar v'Kilel Zeb, he curses one of them, and then he goes ahead and he curses the other, or Kilel Shneim Bevat Achat, or he cursed both of them in one shot, or he Kash Shneim Bevat Achat, or he hit them both in one shot, Chayav. In that case, he is Chayav, because Mimonov Shach, he hit his father, or Mimonov Shach, he cursed his father. Since he covered both bases over here, the assumption is that he did hit his father, which is Chayav Mita, and he did curse his father, which is also subject to the death penalty. So in both these instances, we consider it to be Chayav. And as Rashi over here says, it's Dibahatrat Vadai Hitrubo. They can say to him, warn him, don't hit these individuals, because you would then be in violation of this Isur. So as Rashi terms it over here, our problem in a lot of these cases is what we call Hatrat Safek. If we can't say for certain to him that he's going to violate the Isser, then you can hold him culpable for the violation. So over here Rashi says in these cases you can hold him culpable because it's not considered to be Hatrat Safek, but rather Hatrat Vadai. Now Tosafot takes up the issue as well, which is, well, isn't this really Hatrat Safek? Because we don't know which one is the father. So he makes a distinction here, which is borne out by the Yerushalmi, that there's a difference, or there are two types of safek that you can have. You can have a safek where every party has a certain amount of uncertainty with them. We're not sure if this party is or is not the problem. We're not sure if this meat is or is not kosher. So that is a safek that it's possible that nothing here is non-kosher, possible that everything is non-kosher. On the other hand, here you have a safek, which is we know for certain one of that people is the father. The safek is just which one of the individuals is the father. He says that a hatrat safek will apply when there's uncertainty about whether there's anybody here or anything here that is problematic. But if I can't put my finger on something for sure that is problematic, then that's not called a hatrat safek anymore, because I know for certain you're going to violate the isur if you hit both of these people. I know for sure if you curse both these people, you for sure violate the Isser. It's not that both of them are safek whether they're his father. It's just that one is Vadai his father and one is not his father, and that's the safek. So because of that difference or the nature of the safek, that's different than your classic case of a hatrat safek, and that's why it's not called a hatrat safek over here. Rav Yehuda Omer, bevat achat chayav. He does it in one shot, he is chayav. Well, with cursing it's much easier to curse somebody in a single shot. I mean that both of the individuals. With hitting, Rashi says here, he uses it be makel echad, has a long stick, a long staff, and he hits both of them in one shot. So in that case, you are held culpable. Bezech hazer patur. On the other hand, if he does it sequentially, then it's problematic. You cannot hold him accountable for that, because, as he says, ikashtei hatraot. There you have two separate hatraot, and then you're back to what I said before, that's a hatrat safek. Because when you look at each party individually, you're dealing with a individual who you don't know whether they are or aren't the problem. If you look at them together, then you could say, listen, there's no hatrat safek because one of the parties for sure is a problem. But over here, if you look at each one individually and you give hatrat to each one individually, then you're back to the problem. Is this meat kosher, not kosher? We just don't know. It's a possibility that there's nothing wrong here. And so therefore it becomes hatrat safek again. Batanyo. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Patur Bivat Achat. Don't we have a brayta that says Rabbi Yehuda thinks even if he does it simultaneously, they are Patur? So when it says, Trei Tanae, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda. We have two Tanaim with the position of Rabbi Yehuda, one of which says that only Zechazeh is Patur, but Bivat Achat is Chayav. Then we have another Tana who says even Bivat Achat is Patur. My time at the Banda Patar. According to one who's Poter, what's the reasoning? Now again, Zechazeh, that's not a surprise that he is poter because of this problem of hatrat safek. Problem is, when he does a bevat achat, why is there any reason to be poter? Again, haka'ah might be a little harder, but for sure, by kilalah, there is a statement, one statement, you can say it in one shot, and it's not a problem. So, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Nemar bracha lamata. Ben nemar bracha lamalo. Bracha here is a euphemism. It says that you may not be mikalel elukim. Now that's a question as to what that means, because you can have two meanings to the word elukim. I'm saying it as elukim, which means God, but it also could mean mikalel elohim, which could mean a judge. Right? So Rishonim interpret it both ways, and some interpret it as being both of them, one or the other of them. But that we find lamata, we're assuming here that this means the mikalel elukim, which is the cursing of Hashem chas v'shalom. And then the other one is the klila that is associated with the parent. That one is not allowed to curse their parents. So they're both found in that parsha. So you say, nemar bracha lamato. So we have it down below, which is be'avivimo. Nemar bracha lamalo. It says earlier that ki yekalel elokav. Malo malo she'in ba shutafut. Af lamato she'in ba shutafut. Just like by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, there is nobody else there. So too, by the parents, there can't be anybody else there. I'll explain that in 1 second. And then we have a hekesh in the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim. Both the restriction against hitting one's parents and cursing one's parents are found there. They're actually one pasuk apart. There's a pasuk that intervenes between them. And therefore there's a machloket whether we make that hekesh or don't make that hekesh. Obviously over here, the Gemara is saying that these parties say that we do make the hekesh. And therefore, just like by klala, you're not chayav when you put two together. So too by haka'ah, when you do two together, you will not be chayav. Now, what does this mean here that mala mala shein bashutafut, after mata shein bashutafut? So there are two ways to approach it. The Karen Ora raises both of these possibilities. One possibility is to say that Hashem is the only one. There is no one like Hashem. There's no one who can be in the same category as Hashem. Just like there can be nobody in the same category as Hashem, so too by a parent. There can be nobody in the same category with the parent. So just like when you're talking about Hashem, you're talking about that's who it is, it's Hashem, no one else. So too, when you're talking about a parent, it's got to be the parent, Aviv, the known and singular Aviv, and that's it. So that's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it is possibly by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, maybe when you curse, there, if you do shutafut. Shutafut is a terminology that's used in the Gemara and Sanhedrin for a dual deity or a worship of both God and something else simultaneously. God and Avodah Zarah at the same time. Shutafut. In that situation, there is definitely for Jews a chiyuv. For non-Jews, it's a question whether shutafut has this issue. So over here too, maybe this issue of klala has to be something where the curse is directed at God, but nobody else partnered with God. Meaning that if someone else, so there's another deity mentioned, already that's not a curse of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, because the fact that you added somebody else or something else in there already changes the nature of what you're cursing, because it's not directed at Hashem. And the same thing by Aviv, by the parent. If there's somebody else there besides the father, then it's no longer just a curse of the father, which would be something of extreme nature, because there's some other party that's also included there. And so because of that, you're potur. So those are two different ways to approach or understand this statement in the Gemara. Right now, the Mishnah ended up with Velem b'mishmaro shel zeh b'mishmaro shel zeh. He can go up with each one of the Mishmarot. Here is a Vade Kohen, because both potential fathers were Kohanim. Yet, it says here that he can go up with one Mishmar, go up with the other Ishmar. V'chei me'achar de'inu cholek l'moleh. Where it says, if he's not cholek, he doesn't get a portion with the rest of the Mishmar, why does he bother to go up? Where it says, Lama Ole? And Sam Rashi probably doesn't have the gears of Lama Ole in it, and he has the next piece be the question, but it's the same meaning. Hamar be'ina David mitzvah. He could just say, I want to do a mitzvah. Why is there a question that he wants to go up and do a voda in the Mikdash? Even though he's not going to get paid for it, he's not going to get a reward for it, he wants to do a mitzvah. So why not? What's the problem with him going up? Why do you have a question that why he wants to go up? Ella, Allah loktani ella ole bal korcho. Gemara says, well, it doesn't say the lashon about that he's allowed to go up. Allah, that he's allowed to go up, or if he did go up, it's fine. But rather it says ole, that we pressure him or we can compel him to go up and work in the Mishmar. So that's what the Gemara is questioning over here. Why is it that they can compel him to work with the Mishmar? Since he's not going to get a chelek or a portion with the Mishmar, why can we compel him, or why do we force him to go up to Yerushalayim to work in the Mishmar? If he wants to go, fine. But if he doesn't want to go, why are we pushing him to go? So it says, Amravacho, Barchanina, Amrabai, Amrabi Asi, Amrabi Yochanan, Mishum Pagam Mishpacha. The Mishmar can force him to go, because otherwise it'll cast aspersions on their Mishmar. If he stays back, makes it look like he is not a kosher kohen. And then that makes their family look bad, because now there's somebody in their family that is not a good enough kohen to go up. So they can compel him to go up with the Mishmar, so it does not cast aspersions on their family. And that's what the Mishnah is saying. I think that more importantly, when the family leaves, if he's left behind, that's where they're going to notice. If he disappears twice, they're not going to know. He went on vacation one time, another time went up with the Mishmar. Question is, if his whole family's up in Yerushalayim and he's sitting back here, then that raises issues, that raises questions about him, and they don't want that. They wanted the family to have yichus and to have a clean slate, and they say, you got to come with us because we don't want you hanging back here. If they are both in one Mishmar, then he does get a chelek. The Gemara does not ask the question that it asked in the previous Mishnah, chelek echad, tzalkadatcha, or chelek echad, pshita, which of course he gets one chelek. If he's both of them for the Mishmar, he has a good claim here that he can get a portion. So Tosafot suggests over here, that's because this is up to the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah we asked why. Once we have it in the first Mishnah, that was a chiddush. Now over here, they just repeated it because it's the same list that they had in the previous Mishnah. So that's why the Gemara doesn't ask the same question again. Now the Gemara says, Mishnah shnei Mishmarot dulo. If he's in two different Mishmarot, he can't get a portion because Dazalaha Mishmara Umidachule, because this Mishmar, they say to him, listen, you're part of the other Mishmar, we're not giving you. Vazalaha Mishmara, and if he goes to the other one, Umidachule, they say that you belong to the other Mishmar. He has no definitive claim, and therefore they can push him away. So Mishmar Achad Nami, even if he is both his parents, or the two suspected fathers, are from the same Mishmar, that doesn't help you. Because Azalahai Beitav Umidachule, they go to that family and they'll push him away, and they go to that family and they'll push him away. Meaning that the way that a Mishmar works is that a Mishmar is a greater family. Within that, there are Batei Avot. There are smaller subsections of the Mishmar, and each Beit Av works on one of the days of the week. There's six Batei Avot in each Mishmar, and the Mishmar is subdivided to work. Each Beit Av works one of the days of the week, and then the last one, they all work together. So in that case, the Beit Av that he goes up with is relevant. You can't just say the Mishmar, if he's in the same Mishmar, his potential fathers, one could be from this Beit Av, one from that Beit Av, and they can push him away also. On the day that that one works, you can say you go the other day. And on the other day, they can say you should have gone that first day. So Amar Papa, Chikamar, that's what the Mishnah meant. Im hayu shneihem Mishmar Echad, u'Beit Av Echad, if they're both from the same Mishmar and the same Beit Av, notel chelek echad, then he gets a portion, because then he has a definitive claim here. He for sure belongs to this Beit Av. Hadron Alach Nosim Ala Nusa. With that we complete the perek. And now we move into the next perek, which is Chalitza. So now we have the mitzvah of Chalitza, which we discussed only for 100 daf so far. Now we have the Mishnayot that describe to us how you do Chalitza, or what's the process of Chalitza. Mitzvah Chalitza b'shlosha dayanim. The mitzvah of Chalitza is to be done with three judges. Vafilu shloshtan hedyotot. And even if they are three lay people, that is fine as far as chalitza is concerned. Chalitza b'min'au, chalitza tak shira. If he uses shoe, then the chalitza is fine. The point being that even though today a shoe would be considered to be the main footwear, back then a sandal was the main footwear. So therefore, a shoe is still okay, even though that you want them to do it with a sandal. Banfilia. Chalitzata psula. They use, the translation of anfilia is one of two, is either like a slipper or a sock. That's the terminology that's used in the Gemara. Usually it's some sort of felt type of soft thing that you wear in the house. So slipper or socks that you wear on your feet, those are psula because they're not considered to be shoes. That could be something that you wear on your feet to go outdoors to protect the foot. B'sandal she'eshlo akev, a sandal that has a heel, kasher. She'enlo akev, if it doesn't have a heel, Pasul, clear that you need to have a full shoe. Now Rashi translates over here, by the case of a cave, he says a sola, says a sole. So it's not just the heel, it is a sole. Sandals do have a slightly thicker piece of leather in the back. That is the equivalent of a heel of some sort. But over here, Rashi translates being a total sole. It's not something that just covers the foot, something that protects the foot from underneath. If you're missing that aspect of the protection of the foot from underneath, then it is pasul. Min arkova lamata chalitza kshera. Min arkova lamalo chalitza psula. Here, Rashi translates this with regards to the choletz, the one who is having the chalitza performed with him, the yavama is performing the chalitza with the yavam. Now, the yavam has to have a leg on which the shoe is placed. So Rashi translates over here, if he's missing a portion of his leg, that means minarkova lamato, he has a portion of his leg below his knee, then it's kshira. Minarkova lamalo, if he's missing his leg above the knee, then it is problematic because he doesn't have a leg on which to wear the shoe that the chalitza can be done with. That's the way Rashi reads it. Most of the other Rishonim read it as not that he's missing a leg, but where the sandal is tied on his leg. The equivalent of the Roman sandal, in which they tied the sandal all the way up the leg, meaning that the strings went up the leg. How far up the leg that the laces went makes a difference. If it's below the knee, then it's still considered to be a shoe or a footwear, and therefore the chalitza is kshira. If it's above the knee already, it's not considered to be a shoe anymore. It's more like a pants or some sort of beged, and therefore it will not qualify as chalitza. Chalitza b'sandal she'enu shelo. If he does it with a sandal that's not his, oba sandal shel eitz, or a wooden sandal, oba shel smol b'yamin, or the left one on the right foot, chalitza kshira, b'diavad, all of those work. Chalitza b'gadol, if he uses a shoe that is too big for him, shiyachol haloch bo, as long as he can walk in it, that is sufficient no matter how big it is, obi katan shu chofe et rov raglo, or it's too small for his foot, as long as it covers the majority of his foot, chalitzata kshira. Since it is a good shoe, and in terms of fitting him, b'shatat chak, he can make it fit, he can make it work, then it's considered to be b'diavad, okay. Obviously, the best scenario is that the shoe fits him, and it's his shoe that he is wearing. Now, the Gemara says, u'me'achar dafilu shlosha hedyotot, dayanim lamali. So after you already need 3 hedyotot, why does the Mishnah mention that you need 3 dayanim? The Mishnah opens up and says you need 3 dayanim. And then it says, well, even 3 lay people. So then why mention the word dayanim if you're using lay people? Hakamashvalan, debi'inan, shlosha, shiodik leakrot. You need to have 3 people who know how to read out the parsha in front of the yavam. Ke'ein dayanim, similar to dayanim. So literacy in their day was not a given. It was not obvious. If you were literate, you're already considered to be of a higher class and someone who could be a dayan. So here that they require that the individuals are literate, that already puts them up in a classification that is above lay people. Now they like dayanim. They are similar to dayanim. And that's why the Mishnah mentions dayanim, to say that they have to have not only be lay people, but they have to be individuals who can read or can read out loud the parsha to the yavam. All right, so that's the question. The question of the Mishnah's emphasis over here, when we say that they have to have the ability to read or to read out loud to others, is that something that is a higher standard or is that dropping the standard? So we should even view it differently. Are we saying that the ability to read, that's all you need? You just have to know how to read. You don't have to know the halachot. The halachot, someone else can tell you the halachot, but someone else can't read for you. So as long as you can read, then you can be one of the judges in the panel, because you can do whatever is demanded of you to read out loud. The halachot, somebody else will whisper in your ear what the halachot are, will tell you or direct you what the halachot are. So that's one way to read it. That literacy over here is the minimum. And therefore, you don't have to have the rest. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is that literacy is the highest level. People might know halachot, might know how to adjudicate in cases like this, but to be literate is like the highest form, to know how to read. And then we ask them to read. That's really the highest form here that they can read. So then the tension here between dayanim and hedyotot, you'd be leaning in one direction or the other, depending which way you explain it. In one instance, you'll be leaning towards the hedyot side, which says that all you need is to read, nothing else. Absolutely. And the other way around, it's like dayanim means that you need to know halachot, basically. You need to be able to read. You just don't have to be musmach. And that's what the hedyotot means. So in one aspect, hedyotot means just you're not a musmach. The other direction, hedyotot means that's the main. So you're a hedyot plus you can read. That's it. But you're not closer to dayan. So depending which side you think is primary and the other one is the mitigating factor, so then you lean towards the dayan side or the hedyot side over here. All right. Tanina lahad de tanur banan. We have a mishnah now that supports a braita. Mitzvat chalitza bishlosha. The mitzvah chalitza can be done by 3. Shiodim leikarot. That they know how to read, they can read out loud to them individuals. Ke'ein dayanim. Similar to dayanim, which is exactly what we just said that our Mishnah is indicating. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, bechamisha. Rabbi Yehuda says not 3, but 5. So now my time at the Tana Kamo, why does the Tana Kamo think you need three on this Beit Din and not five? The Tanya is Zkenim, says that you do this by the Zkenim. Zkenim is Shnaim, Vein Beit Din Shakol, and you can't have an equal Beit Din. So as Tosafot says, anytime you have halachot that need to be adjudicated in these cases, and we have machlokot in the Mishnah in regards to how chalitza is performed, you need a Beit Din that's not Shakol, because otherwise you can't come to a decision about what the right procedure is or what needs to be done. Therefore you add an additional individual, and that's why you have three. Harikan, shlosha. That's the three. Rabbi Yehuda, ziknei, shnayim, zikanim, shnayim. The pasuk contains both of these words. Bekarolo, ziknei, yiro. And then we also have the word zikanim, v'alta yivimto asherai, la zikanim. So you have two plural words here. Therefore, each one of them, ziknei is shnayim, zikanim is shnayim, ve beit din shakol, you have four now, and you can't have an equal beit din, mosifin melemad echad. And one more, ikan chamisha. There you have five individuals. Rashi already over here raises the issue that the word zikanim appears more than once in the parsha. Over it says also, later on, v'nikshah yivimto elav leinei hazikanim. So again, the word zikanim appears, that should mean you need seven instead of five. Why does he only dash in one zikanim? So Rashi says the word zikanim later on in the parsha is just the same word again. Since it's the same word again, you don't make a big deal out of it. Now that goes against all the drashot that we see throughout the Shas. Throughout Shas, they say, well, you repeated this word over and over again. Each word is an additional drasha. So Tosafot takes issue with it right away and says, I don't understand. That's just not the nature of the way the Shas is doresh. And therefore, the Ri says that the second zikanim is needed there, because without the word zikanim, there would be a dangling modifier, because there it says the word enei, and it says the eyes of. And it would not be clear whose eyes are demanded to see over here. Is it the Yavam or the Zakenim? Which would mean that the possibility that a Yavam who's blind could not do Chalitza, or is it that a Beit Din that has someone blind and it cannot be the Beit Din? So that is a question, it's a dangling modifier. Therefore you have to write the word Zakenim, and it's necessary to write it to tell you which one it is. Otherwise you wouldn't know. So Tosafot says the reason we don't dash in that word is because it's not extraneous in this sense, because it's needed for the understanding there. Where it says, V'tana kama hai ziknei mai ovid lei. Well, he used the word zikanim to teach you the dayanim. What does he do with the ziknei ro? So mibayle l'rubuye afilu shlosha hezyotot. That's what it comes to teach you. Zikanim teaches you three dayanim. And then ziknei teaches you not just dayanim, but anybody. So Rabbi Yehuda hezyotot minale. So then how does Rabbi Yehuda know? When he demands five, he already used up the word ziknei and zikanim. Where does he get the fact that they can be lay people? Nafkalei mileinei. They're from the eyes. So the enei teaches you that it can be to anyone's eyes. Damarmar, leenei prat lusumim. So that enei comes to teach you that it can't be somebody who is blind. Umid de itzrich leenei le mute sumim. Since you need the pasuk that tells you that you have to have eyes that they not be blind, shmamina filo hedziodot. That's clear that you could be using lay people here. Disagadatcha sanhedrin beinon. If you believe that you need musmachim and you need a real sanhedrin over here, lama le mute sumim. Why do you have to exclude someone who's blind? Because he's already precluded from being a member of the Sanhedrin. If he's precluded from being a member of the Sanhedrin, you wouldn't have to say Prat L'Sumim. So the only reason you would have to say Prat L'Sumim is because you're not using members of the Sanhedrin. And therefore now I have to tell you, don't use a Suma, even though you can use a layperson. Midatani Rav Yosef, in a sense of irony here, the one who says this is Rav Yosef, who he himself is blind. Nafka, the Tani Rav Yosef, Kashem Shebeitim Nukim Bitzedek, Kach Beit Din Minukim Mikol Mum. Just like Beit Din have to be upstanding moral individuals, so too they have to be Minukim Mikol Mum. They have to be people who have perfection in terms of their physical side, not just their moral standing. Shenemar, because they quote a pasuk from Shir HaShirim and Perek Dalet, that whole Perek, the Gemara Darshan, is referencing as a mashal for Beit Din. And over there it says, Kulach Yafa Rayati Umum Ein Bach. There is no mum in you, and they use that as referencing the Beit Din itself. Even though the Gemara in other places brings a pasuk v'yitzvu sham imcha, that they will stand there with you. So by Moshe Rabbeinu it says when he brings in the zkenim, that they will stand together with you. So implying that b'domim lecha, they have to be similar to you, Moshe Rabbeinu. So there the Gemara says, just like Moshe Rabbeinu was not a pasol, so too the dayanim may not be a pasol. So Tosafot points out what Fred says, which is, it's clear there that the Gemara is not talking about mumim over there. It's not talking about physical mumim. There it's talking about yuchsin. It's talking about that he does no psul yichus. So just like Moshe Rabbeinu has no psul yichus, So too, those that stood with him don't have psul yichus. From there, you can't learn out the din of mum. Right. So now the Gemara says v'idach. So now the other one says how leinei my yavidai. The Tanakama, what does he do with the word leinei? He says how the Rava who data. That comes to teach you what Rava says. Dama Rava tzrichei dayanei lemechze roka. The kafa mi pinafik mi puma diyavama. Dayanim have to see the spit, the saliva that is exiting the mouth of the Yavama, when she spits on the ground in front of the Yavam, they have to physically be able to see it. They have to literally see the spit that goes out and hits the ground. Div leinei hazkenim viarka, because it says to the eyes of the skenim, she will spit. So they have to be able to see it. So Mar says, v'idachdami bailig to Rava. Rabbi Yehuda needs it for Rava's drasha as well. So now he doesn't have it available to teach you leinei prat l'sumim, which would teach you that hedjotot are allowed. The Gemara says, Eino Chanami, you're right about that. El hedjotot min alei, where does Rabbi Yehuda learn out hedjotot from? Nafko me bi Yisrael. So it says that bi Yisrael means Yisrael kolduhu. That any type of Yisrael is fine. The fact that it's doing this in front of, meaning that these people are going to be in front of bi Yisrael, v'ni krash shemo bi Yisrael, that they will call his name bi Yisrael, means amongst Yisrael. Any Yisrael will qualify for that name to be called in front of them. Gemara says, "V'idach haYisrael ma'yavidei." So then, what does the Tanakama do with that Yisrael? Mibayaleder Katani Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda be Yisrael, be Beitin Shel Yisrael, velo be Beitin Shel Gerim. That's to come to teach you that the court here must be a court made up, a structured of Yisrael, and not made up of Gerim. Gerim are psulim for the process of chalitza. V'idach beYisrael achrin aktiv. The other one says there are two times that the word Yisrael is mentioned in the Parsha. Since it's mentioned twice, one of them teaches you that it has to be a Beit Din of Yisrael and not Gerim. One of them teaches you that it's Yisrael, even a Hedjotot. V'idach and the Tanakama. What does he do with the extra Yisrael there? He violated Ketanya. We need it for the Brayta. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Pam achat ha'inu yoshvim lifnei Rabbi Tarfon. There was a moment or a time where we sat before Rabbi Tarfon. Uva yivama lachlotz. And Yivama came to do chalitza. V'amar lanu, anu kulchem, chalutza now. All of you should answer chalutza now. So that's when it says, v'nikra shmo, Israel, doesn't just mean the court, those that are sitting in the Beit Din, but anybody who's present. That's what it means, v'nikra shmo, Israel. Anybody who's present has to speak up and say there, chalutza now. That's his name now. V'idach, how does he know that everybody present has to do it? It says v'nikra nafko, because it says v'nikra in the plurality. Or according to Tosafot, the juxtaposition between v'nikra shmo to be Israel is what gives you this limud. So that means not just the dayanim, but anybody who is present. So then the Gemara asks your question, which is elamiata vikaru shnayim vidibru shnayim. So now, if you want to say that plurality all of a sudden means something here, just like ziknei and zikenim, and that you're darshaning all these pluralities, Rabbi Yehuda, then why don't you use Vikaru Vidibru, which is also in the Parsha, and say that adds another two Dayanim and another two Dayanim, until you have like nine Dayanim there. According to Rabbi, then you would have nine Dayanim, or Rabban Arikan Shiva. According to Rabban, you can have seven. If you're already darshaning pluralities, and saying that that's what's driving the case of Dayanim here, then we darish all the pluralities in the Parsha. It says, how mi bayle dektanya, Vikaru lo, velo shlucham, that they call him, and not their agents. So now, the pashtut here is that when they send the sheriff to get him, they don't send the sheriff to get him, they should go themselves and get him. But nobody paskens halacha that way, nobody says that. So here, must mean in the presence of Beit Din. When they are standing in Beit Din, they need to speak to him directly, they can't do it through a shliach, through an agent. Now, it means that you give him a good advice. What is that? Shimayo who yelled v'he's a kena. If he's a youngster and she's older, who's a kena? He's older v'he yelda. And she's a youngster. Omrim lo, malachai tzal yelda. Why do you want to get involved with this young girl? Malachai tzal kena. Why do you want to get involved with this older woman? Klach etzo shekamotcha. Hang out with people like yourself. V'al tachnis ketata l'toch v'techa. Don't bring quarrel into your house with this mismatch. So here they're giving him advice. It's better to do chalitza in this case and not yibum because you can find yourself a better match. It's not a good match over here, and don't do this. Now, even though the Gemara writes it that Mitzian lo etzahu genet, that you give him good advice, it's not to the exclusion of the woman. We don't just give this advice to him and not to her. We give advice that is good for both of them. So we look at both parties and we say, is it good for this party? Is it good for that party? And then once we see that, we give them advice based on both of their circumstances. It's not his to the exclusion of her, but it's rather both parties. We look at it and we give them advice. Amarav Nachman, halacha chalitza b'shlosha. Halacha is that chalitza is done with three. Hol v'stam lantano kavate. Because we have our stam mishnah here. Our mishnah here is a stam mishnah. It says you need three. Even though we see a machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama between whether it's three or five, our mishnah says three, and that's a stam mishnah, so we're going to follow the stam mishnah. Samarle rovel Rav Nachman, iochi miyunami. So if that's the case, miyunami, you should say that the halacha is that it's three, that's none. Now miyun v'chalitza b'shlosha. The miyun and chalitza are both three, and that's a mishnah in Sanhedrin, that is a stam mishnah, and says you do it three. So now, why does the Gemara ask that? We have many stam mishnayot throughout Shas. Why is the Gemara all of a sudden picking on miyun? Is because chalitza and miyun are brought together in the mishnah and Sanhedrin. So since they're brought together, we would have thought stam mishnah by chalitza governs, so maybe by miyun it should be the same thing. V'chitei mahochanami, and if you say in hochanami, you're right. That miyun is also three. V'atanya, miyun beit shemai omim, beit din mumchin, beit hilal omim, beit din, uvshalo beit din. Beit shemai requires musmachim to do miyun. Beit Hillel does not require, it says, in Beit Din or not in Beit Din. Elu ve'elu modim shetzarechim shlosha. They both agree that you need three. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, or Rabbi Shimon, makshirim b'shnayim. They say you only need two, you don't need three. V'amar Rabbi Yossi, v'amar Yumumi, v'amar Rav Nachman, halacha koto zug. The halacha is like that pair. That pair means you only need two, you don't need three. Where it says, hotam chad stama. By miyun, you only have one stam mishnah, which is the mishnah in Sanhedrin. Over here we have two stam mishnayot. We have our mishnah here in Yevamot, as well as the stam mishnah in Sanhedrin. Where it says, Hatam nami trei stami ninu. By miyun also we have two stam mishnayot. Tetnan, miyana, osho chalza bifanav, yisa'ena, mipnei shehu, beitin. So now, this is from earlier in our mesechta. It's a stam mishnah earlier in mesechta, which says that if she did miyun or chalitza before him, he can marry her because he was a member of the beitin. He's not considered to be nogea b'davar. If he's a witness, if he's a bal davar, then he's nogea b'davar. Then he has personal interest here, and we can't believe him. We don't let him use his testimony and then go marry the woman or do something with the woman. But if he's a member of the Beit Din, over there we do not suspect collusion. Because the Beit Din is made up of three parties, and the other two are not going to sin for the benefit of this third party. So therefore he can marry her because he was part of the Beit Din. But you see over there that miyun and chalitza that are mentioned in that mishnah, also stam mishnah, that they have a Beit Din that are comparable, a Beit Din of three that they require. So when it says, Elohatam tre stame, hachatlata stame. By miyun you have two stam mishnayot. Over here by chalitza you have three stam mishnayot. The one here, the one earlier in the Masechta, and the one in Sanhedrin. Where it says, michtei astama. They're all stam mishnayot. V'hastama. And that's a stam mishnah. Mali chadstam, mali tre stam, mali tlata. Why does it make a difference if you have one stam mishnah, two stam mishnayot, three stam mishnayot? Should make no difference. Now, the truth is, between one stam mishnah and two stam mishnayot, there is a difference. Because if you just say one stam mishnah, you could just say that it was happenstance. That just one time they mentioned it. But once you say it twice, you have two stam mishnayot, that's really a shita. That it, clearly they believe the halacha is this way. But between two and three, it should make no difference. Because two stam mishnayot, three stam mishnayot, they both should carry the same weight. Which is you're ready multiple times saying that the halacha is this way. So why should there be a difference here between chalitza and miyun? Now, the reason is because here we have a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama. And in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin where Rabbi Yehuda appears, there we still have it being written in the stam. So it's not smichatz genim vegla rufa b'shlosha divrei Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda omer b'chamisha. So we see a machloket in that Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Then right after it says, v'chalitza miyunim b'shlosha, lo paleg Rabbi Yehuda. And there Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue. Now don't tell me that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't argue there because he isn't mentioned in the Mishnah. He was just mentioned in the Mishnah. He is mentioned in that Mishnah. So if you're going to bring down Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the other cases, you should have brought it down over here. The fact that we don't bring Rabbi Yehuda's position down in these cases shows you that's a stam b'makom machloket. The Mishnah was sultain. Even though Rabbi Yehuda is an alternate shita, so Shema Minah, you can conclude one of two things. Either you can conclude Hadar Bei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda retracted his position, that's why they don't mention Rabbi Yehuda, or that we're clearly paskening against Rabbi Yehuda. But either conclusion brings you to the same result, which is the halacha is you need three and not more. By miyun you don't have that, because by miyun you don't have a machloket where you can say that that stam mishnah carries so much weight because there wasn't a machloket that you didn't mention here in the Stam. All right, now the Gemara continues. Amar Rava, tzrichei dayane le mikveh duchta. When it comes to chalitza, the dayanim have to set a location for where the chalitza will be done. It says, that he's going to go up to the gate to the zakenim. That's a known place where the zakenim are found. Then the Gemara is going to go on here and discuss other things in this context. The question of why Rova's statement is brought over here seems somewhat out of place. But as we read the remainder of this, you will realize that there's an issue of what's called pursuement, that they want to publicize the issue. So too over here, the idea that there's a location where the chalitza is done, and that is a place where everybody knows about and goes to, that gives it more publicity. So that would be the same thing. That's what is meant here by Rova's statement, that they have a specific location for it, means that that is a part of the publicity of chalitza. Why we publicize it, we'll see in a second. Rav Papa, Rav Huna, Brei de Rav Shua, Avdei Uvda B'chamisha. So they did it with five dayanim instead of three. Kaman, Rav Yehuda. They did it like Rav Yehuda. Megara says, V'ha'adar Bey. Didn't he retract his position? So why are they following Rav Yehuda if he doesn't think that way anymore? Where it says, the Fursume Milta, to make it into a public venue, to make it into a big deal. Why would you make it into a public venue? Rashi brings down two possibilities, and both are true. One is that it'll be clear that she's a chalutza, and she won't marry a Kohen. So Kohanim will know now that she's an Isha chalutza, and they won't come to marry her. Number two is, Inami, delayed to inshev lipsuala, to make an announcement, she's a single woman now. She's a single woman. She's available. So they're putting her on the market. They're saying, here's advertising for this woman that she should be able to get married. So that's the point of making this a public issue, which is making sure everybody knows she's a single woman looking for a husband. She can't marry a Kohen. So that is the reason that we use five here to make it into a public issue. That's what I mentioned before with Rova, that he says you have to set a location for the chalitza is because of that issue. Ravashi ikla lebe Rav Kana. Ravashi went to the Beit Midrash Rav Kana Malay, Salik Mar the Gaban, Limluye Be Chamisha. So when he got, he says, come join us so that you can be one of five. Amar Rav Kana, Ava Kamina Kamei de Rabbi Uda, Varmalei Tasak, Bezirza, Dekani Litzrufe Be Chamisha. So you have another case. This Rav Kana says, I was learning or I was part of a group in front of Rabbi Uda. And he says to me, come bring your, I guess, bundle of wood or bundle of reeds, so you can sit on it. It was his makeshift seat that he could have there. It's terufe be chamisha, to make up the five that we need for chalitza. Amalo, lamali chamisha. So he said to him, why do I need five dayanim over here? Amalo, okay, to the farsim milta. The same answer again. Not because we're passing like Rabbi Yehuda, but because we're trying to make a public issue out of this.
Five
is more than three. I guess that three usually is considered to be something that's already a public affair. But five makes it, I guess, even more than normal. I guess it's beyond the normal. Three is a normal publicity. Five is super publicity. So Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Avakai Kamed Rav Yehuda, he was, again, similar to the previous story that he was before Rav Yehuda, just another individual that is in front of Rav Yehuda. So Amar Lei, Sakta Lezirza Dekane Litzterufe. Again, the same thing. Come take for yourself a bundle of reeds or etzim in order to sit on them, so you'll join us. It's Trufe Be Chamisha, to make you one of the five. The Fursume Milta. So now over here he explains the reason that he's calling. He didn't even have to ask this time. He says, listen, you know, I want you here because we want to make it to a public issue. So Amalei, Tanina, he says back to him, didn't we learn already? Be Israel, but Beit Din Shel Israel, velo Beit Din Shel Gerim. That you can only use a Beit Din of Israel for Chalitza, not a Beit Din of Gerim. Va'ana Ger Ana. And I'm a convert. So how are you using me over here? Samar Rav Yehuda, Kigon, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Mafikna Mamona Pume. He says, someone of your stature, that we would force someone to pay, if you said that they owed money, we'd make them pay, then you're already of a stature that you can be on this Beit Din. Samar says, Mafikna, Sagadatcho? Who is gonna allow, if he just says, you owe money, that we're gonna take it out? That's not proper procedure. That's not a judiciary is not going to adjudicate a case and say, oh, he says so. You need witnesses. Rama says, Val Pishnaim Edim Amarachmana, the Torah says, you're gonna have to use two Edim. Nobody's believed as a single aid in these situations. Ella Marana Shtara Pume. We would cast dispersions on a contract based on his word. The way Rashi explains it is, Diomer Yadanabe de Priya, if he says that it's already paid, Lomis Dakikna the Migvame, we will not collect with it anymore. So as Rashi explains over here, there is a condition in which a star We will not collect with this shtar anymore because he already said that it was paid. We will not rip it up because we don't have two edim over here. So it'll be left in this limbo state, which will not be collectible of the shtar, but we won't rip it up as if it's completely paid because we don't have enough evidence to rip it up. But we also have someone casting aspersion, someone of stature, believability, who has nemanut, casting aspersions, and therefore we will not allow you to collect with that shtar. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot does not like that explanation over here, because if that was the case, the Gemara here should have said that. We don't collect, we don't rip it up. It doesn't say that. It says that with Loberana, Shtara Pumeh, which seems to indicate it's a different category, a different issue. And therefore he says, Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Hanan will explain over here, that the Bala Shtar cannot collect until he takes the Shvuah, once this aid comes. And Tosafot says that's true of anybody. It's not true of this individual. Any one aid that comes along and says that he doesn't owe the money, then you have to take a Shvuah in order to have the money collected. So Tosafot says here, even if he is a relative, even if he's a Pasul aid, this individual has so much nemanut that we wouldn't allow a creditor who has a shtar to come and collect unless they took a shvuah. For anybody else, if they were a karov, if they were a relative, or for some reason they were disqualified from the case, we wouldn't let that force a shvuah. But over here, he can force a shvuah even when he's a relative because he is so believed. So now, Tosafot explains over here, this Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, it's not clear why he's a ger. If he's Bar Yehuda, then why is he a ger? Because his father is Yehuda, which indicates that he was born to a Jewish father. So Tosafot explains, and the Rashi explains as well, that he converted with his father. They converted together. So yes, he has a father, but he converted along with his father. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda is Rav Yehuda Hindova, who was a convert. And they converted together, and that's why he was a ger over here that was Pasul. Now, Tosafot discusses some of the issue, and it comes up with the Rishonim as well, which is what is the conclusion of the Gemara here with regards to a ger? Does the Gemara conclude here that a ger cannot join a Beit Din of Chalitza? For the three, for sure not, but even for the five, for Pisume, they cannot join, because that's what Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda said over here, that I can't join because I'm a ger. Is that the conclusion of the Gemara? Or is the conclusion of the Gemara that no, for Pirsum, we allow him to come. You're right, he can't be part of the core three, but for Pirsum, could he be allowed just like he has the ability, or Nemanut, to be posel a shtar? He also has enough stature to be a part of the Pirsum of the Beit Din. They have different opinions in the Rishonim all across the board here with the conclusion of the Gemara. The conclusion of the Gemara is unclear. And based on that, they come to these different conclusions here, whether if he's already a ger of such stature, he now allowed to be a part of the core three, can only be a part of the five to be from Pisume, or can he not be there at all? I mean, that's what Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda said, I can't be a part of this, and that's maybe the conclusion of the Gemara. So you have all those positions taken up by the Rishonim. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line of Kuf Aleph Amud Bet.